questions.
This is a one-time thing, right?
Check your questions. See what
yeah, you read these.
The last topic was we were talking about Egyptian things. Remember how it was?
Naming things. Religion.
Well, I brought up that, and then you were saying, well, you don't have a great knowledge of biblical stuff.
Yeah.
That's probably.
Yeah, I don't have great knowledge of biblical stuff because I was subjected to the Baltimore Catechism classes when I was Catholic. And the whole Catholic version of what the Bible says and what it does is quite a bit different than the way the fundamentalist Christians deal with it. So I would consider myself a different person with the Baltimore stuff. That's all. It'll be revelation.
All right, yeah, I think it was during the interview we were talking about the speech song, hearing the word. In that context, you were saying, I think I've solved some musical problems, some musical questions, and I don't know who had those questions, who led to have them.
The questions that I have to answer for myself, the questions about how you get the point across. And oftentimes, just appropriate with the speech song, when a person sings a word, the idea that is transmitted transcends the word because there's so much other data connected with the word at pitch. Understand?
Can you talk sound?
No, the person receiving the data is receiving not only the word,
the meaning,
that's right. The text of the word is also receiving the pitch data at which it is sung. In other words, that same word sung at a high pitch means something different than the word sung at a low pitch. He's receiving the data of the harmonic climate in which the word exists. He's also receiving the data of the relationship of the pitch of the word to the climate itself. In other words, if you have an A minor chord and the word is sung on a B, then that word is going to stick out because it's not part of the chord. There's three notes in an A minor chord, A, C, D. If you sing that word on any of the notes which are part of the chord, it recedes into the chord. It's part of the thing. If the note is sung on if the word is sung on a note which is not part of the chord, it steps out from the chord and draws attention to itself and becomes a matter of emphasis. These are the types of extra data that exist when you sing a word. An extra spin gets put on the word. If you half say it, half sing it. It makes it even more 3D. It leaps out from the harmonic support and draws even more attention to itself. If you've been singing along and you hear this melody and you get to a certain part and you half sing it, half say it, and it sticks out even further if you absolutely say it because it's incongruous in the setting.
Well, that's probably activating both sides of your brain at the same time.
I don't know about that stuff. I don't know about the left side, right side stuff. I'm not sure that I even buy the theory of it. To me, it sounds simplistic. But
the music supposedly goes into your right brain and spoken word goes into your left brain.
I don't know enough about the research that leads people to draw that conclusion to see whether or not I agree with it.
So that's
one of the questions of how you get your point across. That's besides what time it is, that's one of the big questions that you have to ask.
And that's what you feel glass, the minimalness, don't feel, I want you to put down the minimalness.
I'm not enthusiastic about the minimal music because I think it's like a one joke composition. I mean, you take any composition and repeat a single element for a small eternity, and the joke is over. You're going to build a career out of repeating small elements over and over and over again. The subtext of minimalism is that it's cheap to produce. It's really like Taco Bell. It's cheap to rehearse, cheap to not. And because it doesn't really offer any great intellectual challenge other than the stamina of the listener, just tolerate a number of repeats of a small thing. What's the message? this is a question, this is an useful question which I feel is easily answered and has been answered amply many times. And so it's not a useful question which you feel curious about yourself.
Yeah, the one we just explained, I'm on a comment note that I was specifically related. In guest health psychology, we talk to Trigger Ground.
Oh yeah, Trigger Ground.
It reminds me you find the guest health in that surface maybe. Go back to something big.
Well, Gestalt, the way people normally hear the word is when it's connected with a certain type of psychology. Mm-hmm. But Gestalt doesn't mean just that. It's like concept, isn't it? Not the real translation. It's an object, idea object.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
So yeah, it says idea object, matter mind, concept art. Miles asking, what's the idea behind this frame? You know, and people's interest always is like, what's the idea?
Well, you have to understand the way in which people voluntarily decide to consume something or participate. It has more to do with their own orientation than it does, than it has to do with the concept or the conception of the person who made the object being consumed. Got it?
Mm.
You know, like what I put into the things that I make has literally nothing to do with the way in which people consume them and the reasons they might buy a record or buy a concert ticket or listen to this radio broadcast or whatever. You know, so those reasons have more to do with them than they do with me.
This is on the level. Are there any movies that you found interesting, likable, valuable that a promoter would have seen here?
Movies?
Yeah, I heard you watch movies a lot.
Well, I wouldn't say a lot. I think I watch more movies than I watch movies. But the problem is that my recreational hours are limited. Usually, the first thing I do in the morning when I wake up is turn on the news. And I just get blasted out before I brush my teeth.
That's CNN, the headlines you get the
news. Not the headlines. I don't get the headlines. I get the drone and the long version.
Oh.
And,
that's always on?
If they cycle that like 1 hour, 2 hour blocks.
But it's CNN.
Yeah. So I turn on CNN and I watch that. Then I go to work, and then after I'm finished work, I'll turn on CNN, I'll turn on C-SPAN, I'll speed around and look the news, and if I've already seen it or if I know what's coming up, then I'll switch to one of the movie channels and I'll watch that. But I don't go to movies. The only movies I see are things that have already been out. Whatever.
Any that you found they're surprisingly good?
There's been a few, but I can't remember the names of them. I think basically the quality of films in terms of content is using me for the answer. It doesn't stimulate me at all.
Well, I
used to like monster movies when I was a kid because they're so laughable, but you know, even now they're nauseating.
That reminds me of a question that holds the point of the movie and the question. Was around 1980 or something, they asked you about movies. They asked if you ever cried, and you said, when I said, movies do it. Why don't you say it? Movies make you cry. What part of the kind of content? How bad it is?
No, it's completely irrational. I mean, I can do the same thing going to a Broadway show. I mean, I can literally hate the show and find myself crying because of something that happened. And I know that the fact that liquid comes out of my eyes has got nothing to do with reality.
But what you're thinking or something?
I'm sitting there consciously thinking, this show is a piece of shit and I'm crying. And so that, and I'm saying to myself, well, at least I have some sort of average scale, average size, average vulnerability, human factors working, but at the same time I'm sitting there going, why? And I've given some thought as to what motivates people to have that feeling for, no reason at all, just start crying. It's not even because it's sad. And I haven't got that down to a 30-second soundbite yet, but one of these days I will. I just know that what people normally think of as human feelings are not what they think they are. And I see chemistry here.
Yeah, that's very good, because I had the same thing happen to me in a book of movies. And I wondered, you're sitting there observing and saying, what physical things chemistry is working on them that I'm not aware of, but it's a big thought. So that's what the, I'm glad I asked that question. So you're still working on that one?
Yeah.
Most of it.
Most
of it.
Most of it.
No, no, but you're using the Jet 7. When you put up with the Jet 68, maybe we'll surprise if you like the music for whatever reason. Do you still like that music now? Have you changed? Do you put up with the Jets now? Haven't you done that?
It would be harder to put it out now because we're so much farther away from the, you know, 68. It's a lot closer to 58 than it is to 88.
Yeah.
And it would be hard to find vocals.
You mean 68 is a lot? We're a lot closer to 58 now?
No, no, no. when the record came out in 68, we were closer to 1958.
Right.
Then at 88, we were closer to 1958. You understand? In order to give a convincing rendition of that style of music, you have to have singers who understand the idiom. And they're getting harder and harder to find.
Yeah, they don't. Now, in some article, I think it was in your book, 10 Years on the Road.
What?
10 Years, the 10-year anniversary book, almost 74. Does this life look interesting to you? In there is a picture of you, I think, from Melody Maker, about 66, 67. And you, I think you wrote under, here I am, popping up the glitter shirt. Oh, okay. Do you remember that?
Was it me in a dress?
Yeah, you were in a dress. You were saying
the original headline for that was "Meet a Mutter." It was the front page of the Melody Maker.
Yeah.
And the reason that I did was we had a bunch of pictures taken of all the guys in the Mothers of Invention wearing dresses because the, I think the Rolling Stones had just had a drag for them. They tried to make it more glamorous. So you know, we had probably the ugliest band on the planet at that time. You want to see an ugly guy in a dress? Look at this one.
So the whatever was written under it, but a glitter shorty.
I don't know what.
Yeah, something else because I just thought it was some kind of marketing, kind of ecological marketing. Like you see a trend, you create a counter trend to balance it off. Now you did have a group in the Jets, and you want people to get back dancing together.
Oh, that was a joke. Huh?
Yes, a joke, but it's so interesting. It's interesting. Movement just comes out of the band. He said, totally, I want to do this now. I want to hear this. I want to get this on record. Or are you saying, maybe people need to know some of this just to balance off and put a war
boat
in?
Both of us.
Yeah, that's where you get an idea. What you would like to do
well,
the fun part, and then you see a need for it.
Well, I see a need because I'm watching the news. I'm,
yeah.
You know, looking at my environment. And I spot trends. And I say, well, how can I be useful? One useful thing I can do is say, you're all in this trend, but have you considered the possibility that there's something wrong with your trend? Have you ever doubted that maybe a Rolex watch as a life goal is perhaps not quite the pinnacle of human achievement?
Now, that's easy to do, in a way. It may maybe not be detecting the right trend, but to criticize what's obvious in commercials or in magazine ads.
Well, you think it's easy unless you put yourself in a position where if everybody believes that that's the way the world is, you run the risk of being hated by everyone because you're popping their bubble. As if you could pop their bubble. There's no way I would ever dissuade a person who believes in the Rolex mentality from not going after the Rolex. They could care less what I think about them. But it still needs to be said.
For those who are teetering unconsciously.
That's right. Right on the fucking brink. And the other thing is, maybe 20 years from now, if we're still around, and people look back on those idiot yuppies and the stuff that they were interested in, you know, there'll be one guy who said, take the Rolex and stuff it. And it's the same thing with the Whirling In It For The Money album. Right? At the time that hippies were happening, you know, you couldn't say anything against hippies. They were hot. They were hot merchandise. You couldn't ridicule them. And to ridicule them and have long hair, that was blasphemy.
Maybe that's why you were blacklisted.
Could be.
Screwed up in marketing. So, for me, there's probably evidence for other reasons. I heard Dave Porter, from his interview with you last week. And I like that part. He said there's still that chunk of people from the McCarthy era that still very powerful and political and still working that.
That's right.
Still fighting that fight, you know.
Yeah.
And that
they're still, and you got to understand why they're fighting the fight. They're not fighting a fight. They're selling a scam.
Yeah.
The whole McCarthy era was a scam, and it was another attempt to just clamp down. It's a move toward authoritarian government. It was a tool that was used by people who wanted to move things in that direction. It wasn't just MacArthur, it was J. Edgar Hoover. He was a willing accomplice in all this stuff. He was feeding them the information.
Yeah. And Brad Caffey in Washington, who's got MacArthur going. Catholic, maybe father in that area. That's what was interesting about May's research, because he had those names that were very involved in the 50s in Reagan's government, like Hugh Frieda, maybe Hugh Frieda, part of the Rex 84, that was called, I guess, exposed by the Christian Institute. That team came from the 60s and the team from the 50s. What was interesting is that Larry McDonald was part of that network. And they were caught. Remember the Western Goals issue here in Los Angeles in 83? It was not covered in the national media. And he was subpoenaed to do something before the grand jury. It was the middle of September. He went down in that plane 2 weeks before. And that connects to the Larry Flint thing, because Larry, he questioned the standard line on causes of the KL007. And then he met May, who turn them on to what was really behind the same core people that go back to the 50s, because those records were outlawed in the 70s, but then they showed up in the FBI man, Jay Mullen, was in his room in 83 in his computer. Now you saw what happened to Larry, you witnessed it, you saw that. What do you think, how do you think that Larry, in place of being now in Hustler magazine, totally changed?
Well, I haven't seen Hustler for years, so I don't have no idea about the evolution of the mind. Larry was on to something. I think that he's way off base on the 007 case. I think that it's far too much to hope for that you can willingly get the Russians to assist you by shooting down a certain plane in order to keep a guy from testifying in front of the grand jury. And I think that's pushing the envelope. And I told him.
Well, he didn't say the Russians did.
No. But ultimately, the plane was shot down by a Russian pilot.
Yeah. Okay.
If it had been blown up in midair by a bomb, but it was shot down.
So, was his angle that? What was his angle?
he made that big full page thing. And I was at his house when the mechanical board came into his office. And I read through it, and I said, this is too extreme. People are going to laugh at you. I think you ought to add this paragraph at the bottom. He said, it's too late. It's going to press. And I said, look, I'll go home and I'll type it up for you. So I gave him some language to add on to it. The first one went out without the language, and I think subsequently the language was added to it. And I don't even remember the specifics of the full page or even the language. I just know that there was something about it that just seemed a little bit skewed, and there was some stuff in there that seemed reasonable, but the way in which it was presented could have been more effective if it would have had just this extra thing at the end. That's what I tried to help him with.
And that went on the later. I'm not sure what he believed the Russians didn't do it.
No, not that he believed the Russians didn't do it. He believed there was more to it than the fact that the Russians had shot it down by accident. He was into the conspiracy of another accident and stuff.
Right.
Something else.
You don't think it was a conspiracy?
No, I don't. I think that it's really far-fetched to think that any right-wing covert U.S. organization could then get in touch with their friends in Russia and get them to send out the lone fighter pilot to nuke some airliner who just happens to go off course into this airspace. I think that's asking too much of coincidence.
Other than it was blown up. Yeah. But the Russians went along with the story then. How do you get them through that?
How do you get that kind of cooperation? I just don't think that people are that cooperative in large-scale cover-ups. There's always something that falls out.
The overall effect of our conversation seems to be that we required a lot of information, we paid attention just by daily, and we require a lot of information by being open-minded enough. And we keep saying, well, obviously the common sense solution or approach to this problem is this.
And or at least one of them, or maybe more.
And so there's no conscious strategy. For example, I think in that interview in Rolling Stone at 79, we talked about the journalist. I don't have the exact quote, but it was something like, you see certain elements, and then you impose a pattern on it. But is it more of of that. Do you remember that quote?
No.
Probably, unless it was a misquote. But it suggested.
It doesn't even seem like what I do. I mean, I don't impose a pattern on it. I look for a pattern. I don't impose a pattern on
it. Yeah, it implied that there is a conceptual continuity pattern.
But you, conceptual continuity has got nothing to do with me analyzing the news. Conceptual continuity has got to do with me living my life and turning my life into things doing anything with other people. You know, the things that I released in video and records and all that stuff, part of my life. For whatever it's worth at that time, when it comes out, that's a byproduct of my life. That's a conceptual continuity. Analyzing the news is not me imposing a pattern on the news. I'm trying to get as much data as I can, and then based on what I'm able to gather together, then draw a conclusion. And those conclusions could change if I get more data.
Yeah, so there's no conceptual continuity implies an idea. The way you just said it is biographical continuity, where it's mental.
No. There is a concept to what I'm doing, and there's a continuity to the concept. And I happen to be living inside of the concept. You know, I'm a participant in it.
And the concept is common sense. And taking the data and learning.
That's not the conceptual continuity.
Could you correctly then state?
Well, the conceptual continuity is this. Everything, even this interview, is part of what I do for, let's call it, my entertainment work.
Okay? Right.
And there's a big difference between sitting here and talking about this kind of stuff and writing a song like Kitties and Beer. As far as I'm concerned, it's all part of the same continuity. It's all of one. It all relates in some weird way back to the focal point of what's going on.
Does it relate?
All right. Does
it relate in a way that you will see more obvious later?
Well, I think it's probably quite a bit of the continuity is made obvious by what we've discussed here. And I think if there's a way to absorb all this in one sitting in a broadcast, if anybody knew enough about what I'd already done, they would see that there is coherence to it. That it's been very purposeful and it's been going on for, 20 years, 25 years.
Well, I think of the scientist metaphor, the chemistry that Quentin made is the point that you saw from Boulez. He said, yes, that needs to be said. And he kept that idea, that image, that model, that.
Oh, you're talking about Boulez?
Yes. Oh, was it Boulez, not Boulez?
Right.
Yeah, the idea of the physicality of music, the chemistry. And maybe it's implied in the tenets of his church. Can you synopsize, say, you know, I see the continuity in this past 3 hours. And I tried to say it.
As above, so below.
but as above, what?
As above, so below. You pick the what.
All right, you pick the what. No, that was very interesting to talk about how this interview relates to something else that's gone before. In other words, you're trying to communicate. This is the situation with communication.
Well, that's one of the things that differentiates us from pick a lower species. Fill in the blank.
Yeah.
We have the ability to communicate with each other using tools which other animals don't have access to. Whether or not we use them or use them properly.
Yeah, so there's not, see, we're implying, I'm asking for the right words to come out, or the words that I think hit the thing in the head, the bomb. But it's the process that we talk about, what we're doing, the process of communication is what you're talking about. Your life, your day-to-day taking information goes into your work, appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
An interview, a new encounter.
Mm-hmm.
That is the concept of continuity.
No, that's random. That's, you allow yourself to experience a random events like people coming in and do it. That's all. I don't know what's going to happen in this interview. I never know when I do any of them if you allow for random events. The conceptual continuity is something that is steered. It's not random. It's steered. There's an idea that moves it in a direction. It's an object.
Your will or your perception of something you think that should be included or in order.
Yeah, like you're taking your data environment, or reordering the data environment in order to transmute it into something else, transmute it into another channel.
Now, is that attention? that's doing with his attention? Is there an image that it's referring to?
You mean in order to steer, you have to have a North Star?
Yeah. Is there a North Star in front?
I don't think there is. It doesn't need to be. In fact, you know, the only time North Star is useful is if you have to steer in a certain dimension, a physical dimension, and then you get one type, one place to another in a type of dimension where those spatial relationships are recognized as reality. At that point, you need a compass and you need your North Star. If you're in another dimension where those types of relationships don't exist, you don't need the North Star.
You may need another kind of.
Not necessarily.
You'll run the randomness to happen.
Well, if you work in a dimension where everything's happening all at the same time, then that would kind of indicate that there wasn't such a thing as distance, either spatial or time difference or whatever. It's like a unity point. So where's the navigation? You're already there.
So you can incorporate what comes to you in time.
Yeah, it's like a black hole. You know, all I got to do is stick there. All shit's going to pour in the hole anyway.
Now there's a negative image black hole.
No light escapes?
Yeah.
Well, no light escapes until the density increases to the point where it blows a hole in the other side.
Yeah. All right. So this steering mechanism is attention. It's thinking of it as entertainment, which is sort of offering slack, creating slack in a situation.
Sure, there's nothing better for a human being than some form of entertainment. It's good for them. Now, whether you think hockey is entertaining, which I don't.
Yeah.
You know, if you think it's entertaining, go get hockey. And if you like opera, which I don't, go get an opera. Everybody needs to have something to take the pressure off of, something where they can stop thinking about their normal factory rate for a while.
And that's a guiding principle. Is that part of the concept of continuity?
Yeah, sure. That is an aesthetic value.
You mentioned the hockey. I lived in Nova Scotia for 10 years, and in 1971, 72, at the time, I think, playing my Bills game, we were doing a radio interview. A friend told me, I could pick it up in New York, it must have been a major station. And they asked me, what do you see in that mural? Some guy on the program had a mural from DJ, so I guess he asked me to look in it. And he said, well, I see Billy with a hockey stick. Now, that's what you actually saw, or was there a reason to say Billy had a hockey stick at that point?
So I saw.
Okay.
Some things are very, very simple.
What are the most complex things?
The most complex thing is trying to get people to understand that everything is happening all the time.
Yeah.
That's a rough one.
Yeah. Now, that's interesting. Are you including post and one survived death? I don't think the church will be interested in survived death.
I don't think that's actually said.
All right. When we talk about
I'm not talking about afterlife. This is not mystical, metaphysical stuff. I'm talking about
all time exists now.
Yeah, it is.
And we can experience it all now in this lifetime. So for one lifetime,
you got a brain. It is part of an organism which will decay. It runs down. Until they find a way keep the oxidation process from continuing to the point where you rust yourself to death, you're going to fall apart and you're going to die. There you go. Okay. Now you've got X number of moments of your, undead state to deal with whatever you're going to deal with. And I think the best way to do it is to deal with as much as you can deal with while you're alive, not as little.
Yeah.
Deal with it.
So, another way, trying to get people to believe that all time exists now is trying to get them to have an open mind, open senses, to not filter data that's coming in.
Well, you just got to listen to all the stuff that's coming in, good, bad, and indifferent. And, hope that you have the educational preparation to be able to sort it. That's one of the problems why people would find what I do difficult for them to adapt to, because I got out of the U.S. school system at a point where you could still learn to read and write. And I don't think that you can do that anymore. I think that the basic education that people receive in this country is so pitiful that they can't. They're not even equipped to sort data. And I don't think it's an accident. I think the school system is purposely damaged to keep people from being able to sort data. Because only a person who can't sort data will vote for a guy like Bush or Reagan. You have to be numb.
And at the same time, while they're making the school system harder, they are increasing the information flood on people with cable, multi-channels, the fiber optics.
It's red. More dread.
Yeah. So, maybe someone could overcome the stupidity that they've been trained in.
I think it's possible, but it's just too expensive. And there's a lot of people who would say, I don't want to know. I just don't want to know. Perhaps more than 50% of the U.S. prefer not to know. Because if they knew, they would have a suspicion that if they knew, they would be unhappy because of it. And they will go to any extreme to keep themselves from knowing. In fact, they will even attempt to harm people who will help to let them know.
And that's our problem.
It's one
of our problems.
Yeah.
How many problems do we have?
A lot.
At the same time.
But it all boils down to a problem of mental health. One of the most excruciating forms of mental health is greed. You know, like bad mental health is a greed problem. If you look at all the ways in which greed as a negative mental health state has translated into physical problems for people all over the world, see, you can trace a lot back to that.
And so who are the brain pools?
Well, it could be anybody that decides to opt for employment in the organization. And a lot of people police their own brains. They're like citizen soldiers, so to speak. I've seen people who will willingly arrest, try, and punish their own brains. Now that's really sad.
So that question.
That's vigilante brain police. It's not even official. It's like self-imposed.
I think we know some freak about who are the brain police. I found this phrase or this song resonating, rolling through my brain. Like the question implied a lot of answers. You once said that nobody ever figured out who the brain police are.
I've been working on it.
Still working on it?
Yeah.
Some candidates?
Well, it's hard to pin it down to like one central agency when you realize that so many people are willing to do it themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, the people who want to become amateur brain police, their numbers grow every day. People who say to themselves, I couldn't possibly consider that. And then spank themselves for even thinking, for even getting that far. You don't even need to blame it on a central brain police agency. You've got plenty of people who willingly subject themselves to self-mutilation.
And you knew that for a long time.
Well, no.
But to say you're working on it implies
There's more. I mean, I'm sitting here right now, I'm telling you, I'm still thinking about stuff. I'll tell you what I've got fully developed conclusions on and what I don't. And even the ones that are fully developed, if I get new data tomorrow that changes it, the next interview is going to have something different. So
what are some of the conclusions?
Whatever you got on the tape.
All right. Okay.
I don't sit around and constantly think of the catalog. If somebody asks me a question, my best lead at the time.
To say nobody figured out who are the great police, you yourself haven't figured it out yet.
No, they exist. They really are. It's not a question.
Yeah. Okay, they exist. Not only two.
Multiple
answers. Multiple levels. There is their own self-policing. How would you characterize some of the new techniques that you don't know who they are, but what they're doing? Well, we spelled that out in the interview.
Yeah,
okay. So, this interview has been intended to figure out who are the brain police.
Well, you could say that. I'm not sure that's really true.
Is that what we've done?
No, I think the interview is what it is. And to just be able to sum it up and say you're trying to figure out where the brain police, I think diminishes what's been said here.
Cheapness, that's right. So this interview is not going to end.
Oh, yes, it is. Look at Gerald beating his leg over there.
Okay, I think that's a good way to answer.
Okay, there you go. The interview is now over.